The Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Not knowing what he said, while he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my Son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silence, and in those days told no one of any of the things they had seen. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." And while he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. If you're a football fan, and especially if you're a Cardinal or Carolina Panthers or a Denver Broncos fan, today is your day. Now, while sports in general don't often excite me, as I just about said Cardinals instead of Carolina Panthers, you can get the gist. I am captivated by football fans that have a passion for the finer things in the sport, like tailgating. Now, while I've never tailgated before, I hear that it's quite an experience. The die-hard tailgaters park in the same spot year after year. Food and drinks and a good grill are essentials, I'm told. And it's about gathering together with others. It's about spending time in one specific location. And in one sense, it's like camping out, even if tents aren't allowed at Soldier Field. So too, in today's reading, we hear that Peter wants to hunker down and hold on to a special moment. We hear that Jesus takes Peter and James and John up onto a mountain to pray. And you may remember how important prayer is here for Luke. We saw Jesus pray at his baptism when he received the Holy Spirit, and we'll see Jesus pray when he's betrayed in the garden, and we'll see Jesus pray yet again on the cross. Prayer, as you may know, is one of those key words in Luke. And so here they are praying on a mountain. And suddenly Jesus is transformed in appearance, and he begins talking to Moses and Elijah. Now, in both Matthew and Mark, we get a transfiguration story that's pretty similar to Luke up to this point. However, Luke articulates the content of their conversation, while the other Gospels don't give us that insight. Luke says that they talk about Jesus' departure, which is to be completed in Jerusalem. Now, let's pause there for a moment. If prayer is one keyword in Luke, then Jerusalem is another keyword in this story. Luke has one geographical focus, and that is Jerusalem. The entire gospel points to the unfolding of Jesus' betrayal, conviction, crucifixion, and ultimately his resurrection, and all of that happens in Jerusalem. Anyway, we've heard the key words of prayer and Jerusalem so far in this text, yet there is another hidden key word in this reading. And it's hidden in the sense that it's caught up in our translation that we have today. For we hear that Moses and Elijah and Jesus are talking to Jesus about his departure. Now, departure is kind of a boring word. It reminds me more about a trip to the airport than something spiritual happening. But the Greek word translated as departure here is exodon, coming from the root of the word exodos, which sounds a lot like, any guesses? Exodus. That was easy. See, you guys are all scholars right off the bat. Hello, keyword, Exodus. This is kind of a big deal. Here is Moses. Here is Exodus. Now, Exodus is a book in the Hebrew Scriptures, and in that book, we read of the story of Moses, who brings the Israelites from slavery into freedom. And in Judaism, this is the prime story of salvation and how God's chosen people were rescued. Moses is an important player in the story of God's liberation in the Hebrew Scriptures. So, thus, when Peter sees Moses with the important prophet Elijah talking with Jesus, he rightly identifies the significance of this moment. After all, they're on top of a mountain where epiphanies historically happen. There are three influential people who have a conversation, and Peter basically wants to tailgate. Well, actually, he wants to build some tents or some dwellings. This is literally a mountaintop experience that Peter wants to hold on to. And I totally get that. We've all had those moments when we wish that they would never end. Maybe it's that moment when you held your newborn child for the first time. Or after an outstanding date that rarely happens in the world of Tinder and OkCupid. Or how about on your wedding day? Or on your graduation day? Or at the signing of a contract for your new job? Or the day you finally purchased your first house? Or after a wonderful night with your friends or family members? It's in those moments that we want to set up a tent. We want to remain in that feeling. We want to remain in that place. And we want to be with those people forever. Yet, much like those fleeting moments of awe in our life, Peter isn't able to hold on to that glorious moment. For a cloud descends while Peter is saying how he wants to set up those tents and how he wants to hold on to that moment for a while. And then a voice, almost talking over Peter, reminds the terrified disciples to listen to Jesus, God's Son. And then, all of a sudden, like waking up from a dream, the haze is gone, and there is Jesus standing alone. And then, after all that, Luke doesn't go on like Matthew and Mark and explain the significance of this. No. Instead, Luke tells us, after all that, the disciples and Jesus head down the mountain and are caught right up in the messiness of life right away. They are confronted with a man whose son has seizures. And while the disciples cannot heal the boy, Jesus not only can heal the boy, Jesus does heal the boy. And these two parts of the lectionary today, these almost two very different stories, are kind of an odd pairing. In fact, the scholars who created the lectionary gave us preachers the option to skip that second half, to skip that story of healing, and just to focus on that elevated encounter. And I was tempted this week to simplify the reading and ignore the healing story altogether. I thought, why bother? Let's just get on with our pancake brunch after church, right? Yet as I studied the scriptures, and as I read a bunch of commentaries this week, I had an idea why Luke put these two stories in a row. You see, the location of these two stories together help me understand why Peter's request isn't realized. I mean, why can't they just hang out in the glory for a while? Well, you see, Peter doesn't get a camping trip with the great sages of old because it doesn't fit with Jesus' identity. When Jesus speaks with Moses, they're talking about Exodus, an Exodus that will be fulfilled in Jerusalem. And Jesus' ministry is about Exodus. For much like the Israelites' primary form of salvation came through the outstretched arm of Moses over the Red Sea. Do you remember what happened with that outstretched arm over the Red Sea? Is anybody here with me today? Bueller, anyone? Part of the Red Sea is what I saw. Part of the Red Sea. So right, that's the salvation moment. Boom, sea is parted, they're on their way, and the Egyptians are no longer behind them. So much like the Israelites' primary form of salvation came through that outstretched arm of Moses over the Red Sea, so too in Luke, the outstretched arms of Jesus will be the supreme act of salvation. This time, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm that accomplishes this salvation is paradoxically wounded and stretched out in suffering. This is a monumental shift in Judaism, and I would argue for us as well. For God is not only in the temple in Jerusalem, but God is now seen as being among us. We do not find God only in the far-off mountaintop experiences, but rather we find God right here in the messiness of life. We find God in both the beauty and in the suffering. We find God's love on the wedding days and the parting of ways. We find God's gift in the wealth of the Gold Coast and in the blood-soaked streets of the Greater Grand Crossing neighborhood. We find God in birth and in death. We find God in mountaintop experiences and in the valley of despair. For our God does not simply camp out on high and lofty places. No, our God is among us. And that is what Peter doesn't understand. Peter missed that it's all about Jesus' journey to the cross. The cross is Jesus' glory. It's about Jesus' love of those in need. It's about a God who prays deeply and loves freely. That is Jesus' identity. And that is why they ain't going camping today. And this text is another week of a countercultural message from Luke. This message is just as hard as some of those we've heard as of late. The message, it pushes us through the comfortable to reach out and be agents of healing to a world that isn't often full of those glorious mountaintops. Today's message is not a message to set up a tent in the glory, but rather it's a message to journey among those in need. And I know, at least from my perspective, I'd rather camp out in an ivory tower with 5-star service than bump shoulders with someone who is different than I. Yet I also know that I have been the one who has been lost and confused. I have yearned for healing and yearned with others for healing. And then I've seen God's presence when another has journeyed with me to a new life. And so today, as we ponder the experience of the mountaintop and the valleys of life, I wonder if we can take on the role of the disciples. can we look both towards the valley of Ash Wednesday before us, and can we also look back at the glorious Epiphany as both manifestations of God's presence? After all, over the past month, we've looked at a variety of epiphanies, or the way that God reveals God's self to us. Some of those ways we've heard, especially from Luke, are jolting, and some are affirming. And today we see that God is not only in the mountaintops, but that God is also in the valley. Today our God shows us that camping out in one place is not the way that God does it. It's not God's identity. For our God is all about a life-giving exodus. Jesus is Emmanuel, meaning God with us. And friends, I have said all of that today to remind you of this important point. God is with us, and God is with you. As we begin this season of Lent on Wednesday, and as new council members are installed to help lead us, and as we may hunker down for the Super Bowl today, I pray that we keep our eyes open like the disciples. I pray we remain alert to the manifestations of glory all around us, both in this place and in our lives. Today, come to this table. Come to this table of welcome and see clearly the presence of God. Come and experience the glory of God. Experience the gift of God's love both in bread and in wine. Taste that goodness in your mouth. Feel the freedom of that love in the bread. See the haze of God's presence in the incense. And then come and know God's presence in both the mountaintop and in the valley. Amen.